Walmart says it's closing more than 60 of its Sam's Club locations. Thousands of employees will be laid off, and some of those stores reportedly shut their doors already this morning. The announcement comes just hours after the company said it's raising the minimum wage to $11 for its Walmart employees, thanks to the new tax law. The retail giant is also expanding its parental leave benefits. The changes, they're expected to go into effect next month.
Turmoil for the Bitcoin market on Thursday as South Korea announces it may ban cryptocurrency trading altogether. While lawmakers the world over are struggling with how to regulate Bitcoin, Seoul has been opting to clamp down on trade, worried over its frenzied local popularity. Its skyrocketing value last year drew students and housewives into investing. Now the justice minister says a bill is in the works to put digital coins off limits.
Move over, self-driving cars, robots, and artificial intelligence. Japanese car maker Nissan wants to give brains the stage today. Lucien Yorge, Nissan senior innovation researcher, unveiled his team's work to use brainwaves to help the car drive better. The device can read the driver's brainwaves before the driver makes a move, which gives the car split seconds to adjust in advance. This technology is still far off, but it's Nissan's way of letting science run ahead of the times with the hope something will eventually stick.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's January 12th. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. The CES Consumer Electronics Show is wrapping up in Las Vegas. So far, so good. No robot show hosts or news anchors yet, and no one is at least talking about replacing me with a robot. Lots of cars and other kinds of robots, though, at CES. We'll try to tell you about some of the hot things that Jennifer Jolly has sent us an email about her seeing later in the show. Elsewhere in the program today, we're going to be talking a little bit about the airline industry. Brian Summer will be here from Skift, and we'll be talking about specifically the airports of the future and how maybe they can be less of transportation hubs and more of an entertainment location. Certainly that would help when your flight is delayed. And Paul Nolte is here. He'll join us momentarily for our regular Friday discussion. But first on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures pointing toward opening gains later on Wall Street, up about 101 points right now. NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher as well. In Europe, most of the indices are higher, and the FTSE is up about a quarter, same with the DAX, a third for the CAC. In Asia this morning, markets are generally mixed, with the Nikkei the lower. The Hang Seng is up almost a full percent at 292 points. Crude oil is at $63.47 a barrel, which is down about 33 cents. A couple of stories we're watching for you. You heard there in the opening montage, Walmart saying it's closing 63 Sam's Club stores across the country. About 10 of those stores will be repurposed into e-commerce distribution sites. One stores in Batavia, Matson, Naperville, Streamwood, Wheeling, Romeoville on that early closing list. Closures came on the same day that Walmart announced it would be boosting its starting wages for U.S. workers, moving it up from $10 an hour to $11 an hour, and those one-time cash bonuses for employees, but only employees who have been with the company for about 20 years. The ride-sharing company Uber confirms it had technology to shield company data when law enforcement raided offices outside of the U.S. Uber says the tool, no longer in use, could lock computers and smartphones and change passwords remotely from the company's headquarters in San Francisco. Bloomberg reported yesterday that Uber used the tool, known as Ripley, from spring of 2015 until late 2016 in several cities. And Facebook is going to be making some changes. You may have already seen them. It's tweaking what people will see on their timeline to be, in their words, more meaningful. The company says people will spend less time on Facebook as a result. Changes come as critics say social media can make people feel depressed and isolated. The new feed will show you more of your personal connections with friends and family as opposed to business pages and publishers. A regular Friday conversation this morning, Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management. Paul's a senior portfolio manager there. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you, Steve. Good morning.
Trying to find some bad news to talk to you about, but it's all sort of rosy.
It is all very rosy, and part of the reason why, you know, we were shocked, actually, the market went down one time this year. And as you indicated, futures are up another 100 points or so. But when we look at the economic data, you know, the PPI that came out yesterday was maybe the only fly in the ointment where we saw, you know, core PPI roll over on a year-over-year basis a little less than 2.5%. That is probably the only thing that is well short of the Fed's target right now is the inflation number. But everywhere we look around the world, we're seeing economic growth. We're seeing good manufacturing numbers. We're seeing good employment numbers. So everything is hitting in all cylinders, and investors are taking notice. So investor sentiment now is among the most bullish levels in well over a decade. And that alone gives us a little bit of a reason to pause, because if everybody's on one side of the boat, that's probably not the side that you really want to be on. So we could see a market pullback, and this probably sounds a little familiar. We've been talking about that for a while, and we have yet to see the market really pull back anything more than 3% now for a year and a half. But it is possible to see the market pull back here, and I think investors might be a little bit freaked out, if you will, if we see the markets pull back even 1%, 2%, because we haven't seen it in such a long time.
Back to the inflation numbers, Paul, what should we be seeing? What should that number look like?
Well, given where we're at in the economic cycle, we're certainly late in the cycle. We're seeing the manufacturing activity pick up. We're seeing durable goods orders pick up. We're seeing retail sales pick up. We should see the consumer price index, which is due out later this morning, probably in that 3% range, maybe even a little bit higher than that. And so that's one of the targets that the Fed's looking at. It should be above where the Fed is targeting right now. And then we're going to add on to that the stimulus that's coming from the tax package. So we could see inflation pick up. We're already starting to see commodity prices in general increase on a year-over-year basis for the first time, really, in about 2-3 years. So there are some underlying currents that we could see a pickup in inflation maybe later on this year. And I think that goes along with some of the commentary from the bond bulls, or certainly the bond market gurus like Bill Gross and Jeff Gundlach, who are saying we should be very cautious here in the bond market because yields are starting to pick up in a meaningful way. And that could spill over to the equity markets maybe later half of this year.
Paul, hang on. We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, our regular Friday talk with Paul.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
521. Glad you're here with us for our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Paul Nolte is with us with Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, I just heard Daria there talking about what happened at the Treasury Department yesterday about withholding. It's probably a good idea to remind folks to be very careful where this is concerned and not to assume that the government is going to take out the right amount of money.
Oh, absolutely. And you can make those adjustments as often as you want to when it comes to payroll taxes. One of the things that we counsel clients about is, you know, what kind of refund do you normally get? And a lot of people normally say, well, you know, I get $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, and then I use that for my savings. I fund my 401k with it, whatever the case may be. But really what you've done is you've given the government an interest-free loan for that $2,000 or $3,000, and you want to adjust your withholdings so that your refund is not nearly as large, and then you fund your 401k, your IRA, whatever it might be, over the course of the year, and you use that money as opposed to the government using that money. So it pays to revisit that on a regular basis and make those adjustments. This year is going to be kind of tough because, you know, again, depending on what you're doing this year, because of those changes in the tax laws, it's going to be difficult to estimate what your true tax liability will be until we get to April of next year.
Yeah, I'm one of those people that I'd rather pay a few hundred dollars than have the government keep it all year long. So I try to watch that very closely. This year, right, though, this year is probably that tax calculator may be the only help for some folks. Paul, let's talk a little bit about earnings season, which gets underway today. Banks are out of the gate this morning.
They are, and it's going to be. They're going to be discussing a lot about the tax law. So we're going to hear this quarter from a lot of companies, and they're going to be talking about their estimates for future earnings based on the changes in the tax laws. And we could see some very interesting numbers from a lot of companies, banks being one of them, where they may take a lot of expenses in the fourth quarter than they normally would because of the changes in the tax law. Higher tax rates, if I bring all my expenses into the fourth quarter where it is a much more meaningful deduction for me, I'm apt to do that, which could artificially push down the earnings numbers that we see in the fourth quarter. A lot of analysts understand that and are looking through that to the potential earnings that we're going to see in 2018 and beyond, but realize that the fourth quarter could be a little bit of what they call a kitchen sink, where we're just throwing everything into it to get our earnings numbers as low as possible to get the benefit then next year to report higher earnings numbers, and I don't have to pay as great a tax on it because my tax rate now is a little bit lower. So companies just like you and I would be are going to be playing the tax game a little bit here as we get through the fourth quarter and into the first quarter of this year.
I've seen some estimates from analysts to say that with the tax bill that some companies, when we finally see them report earnings based on the tax bill or tax law, could see those earnings up 20-25% on those earnings reports.
That's, you know, and it's going to be those that are having that are a little bit more domestically oriented, that normally in smaller companies where they will pay higher tax rates or they have a normally higher tax rate, now with that tax benefit that will help them a little bit more maybe than some of the larger multinationals. The estimates right now for the S&P 500 are we could see earnings boost of probably in the order of 10, maybe 12% or so. But it's going to be a one-time addition, a bonus, if you will. It's not going to be an ongoing 12% compounded growth in earnings. So we're going to see a pop this year, and then we'll get back to a normal year-over-year growth rate in earnings as we get out into 19 and 20. So I think that's part of the reason why investors are very interested in the stock market. Again, all of the benefit to this is going to the savers, and the savers are putting their money into the equity markets and keeping equity prices pretty elevated here.
What do you like here at the end of the week? You mentioned there's some domestic companies might be faring better in the short term with this. So what else do you like?
We still really do like the international markets, the emerging markets especially. That's been a theme of ours now for really the past year or so. Last year they were up over 30%. They're out of the gate with a 5, 6% rate of return just in the 2 weeks so far this year. So for a lot of investors that have put their money internationally, we've had a very good year within the first 2 weeks of this year. One of the things that we are looking at is we are looking at commodity prices, and this is the first time in really 5, 6, 7 years that we're starting to see commodity prices pick up a little bit, energy especially. So we're starting to look at that area, starting to maybe dabble our toe into maybe one of the major oil companies like an Exxon or a Chevron, but starting to take a look at the commodity world much more broadly as potential for investments over the next month or so. And we think that we may see a turn in inflation later this year into next year, where a lot of those companies, mining companies, et cetera, will be beneficiaries.
All right, Paul. Dow futures up 106 points right now, so it looks like it could be another positive day on Wall Street.
Absolutely. We'll be keeping an eye on those PPI numbers this morning, or I'm sorry, the CPI numbers to see if it confirms the weakness in the PPI yesterday. So it will be an interesting inflation report this later this morning.
All right, Paul. Have a great weekend. We'll see you again next Friday.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You can find more about Paul and his colleagues over at Kingsview at kingsview.com.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Tech companies in the state of Illinois raised nearly $2 billion of venture capital in 2017, the most the state has seen since 2000. Illinois companies raised over $1.8 billion last year, an increase from the $1.1 billion in venture capital local startups raised in 2016. New York startup Common, which operates co-living spaces, is opening its second home in Lakeview East. The home, called Common Briar, is leasing out 14 bedrooms, with rents beginning at $1,400 a month. Similar to co-working, the co-living trend first began in the Bay Area and expanded nationwide as rents across the country continue to rise. And Chicago-based RetireUp, a retirement planning software company, has acquired RevPro, a smart forms and digital business execution platform. The joint company will use the RetireUp brand and will be headquartered in Chicago. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoNO.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. We're glad you're here with us on our Friday edition. When that big snowstorm hit the East Coast last week, many international flights were already on their way to New York's John F. Kennedy International Airport. Many of them didn't make it completely, had to go elsewhere. Others had to sit on the tarmac at airports. It was a big mess. And Brian Summers, airline business reporter, has been writing about this for Skift. Chicago was involved in this because some of those flights had to come here. And maybe you were sitting on the tarmac or on one of these flights. Let's find out what happened from Brian, who joins us this morning via Skype. Brian, what was the situation here?
So last week, as everybody knows, there was a giant storm in New York and the East Coast area, and JFK Airport closed for a day. It was a disaster. There were a bunch of flights from Europe and Asia especially that had to divert to other airports. I'm actually told that 28 of them scheduled to go into the East Coast ended up in Chicago, which was a lot. The problem wasn't so much the diversions, because that happens all the time. It was the problem of getting the airplanes back to New York JFK. There were just too many arrivals all at the same time. The airport couldn't handle it. There weren't enough gates. There was also traffic jams on the airfield, just like you would have, on the highway. And it was really a disaster. And then a couple days later, a water main broke at JFK Terminal 4. And it really took about a week for the airport to recover. Not a great way for the United States to look.
And this sort of really encapsulates the airport infrastructure problem we have in the U.S., doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, JFK is set up in a different way than most other U.S. airports. A lot of its terminals are actually run by private operators. And, you know, usually you think of a private terminal being a better run place. But in this case, that didn't happen. I've talked to a few people, and they actually think that Chicago might have fared better in this situation because Chicago has Terminal 5. It's not run by a private contractor. It's run by the city. And the city might have been a little bit more proactive about ensuring there was space on the taxiways and there was gate space for all the airlines coming in.
What do you think needs to change in the future? Is this sort of a structural problem that doesn't have an easy fix, or is there one out there?
Well, I think everybody related to airports needs to understand that you can't keep people coming from Europe or Asia on an airplane waiting for a gate for 2, 3, 4 hours. It's just not fair. And one of the problems at JFK was if an airplane always goes into Terminal 1 there, even in this case with the disaster, it had to wait for a gate at Terminal 1. And you'd like to be in a situation where people can just say, okay, the weather is horrible. It's not a good day. Let's just let these airplanes park wherever they need to be, and we'll deal with it later. And I think Chicago would be able to do that if the time came.
Is this a part of this? Do you think security reasons may have played into this, or was it just not thinking well?
I'm not sure it was so much security. I mean, there is a problem with customs and border protection. They need to clear flights as they come in. There are some gates where you can't park a plane and have people clear customs. But mostly this was just a case of mismanagement, and it should not have happened, and hopefully it won't happen again anywhere else.
I can't imagine being one of these passengers. I've seen lots of horror stories. I bet you have as well.
Yeah, you know, it's easy for me to say from my home office that people should just be calm. Sometimes things go wrong and there's not much you can do about it. But I do know how hard it is to be on a plane for 10 or 12 or 14 hours and then not have a gate. The funny thing is that the people who ended up doing best here didn't quite realize it at the time, but there were some flights from Europe that got about halfway over the Atlantic Ocean and then they took a giant U-turn and returned to Europe. And of course, at the time, people were complaining about it because they didn't want to go back to Paris or whatever, but they ended up doing a lot better than people who had to wait at Kennedy on the ground for hours.
Well, I'm betting some people that had problems may have gone on to Twitter or social media to complain to their airlines. You've written another really good story here about how some of these airlines are really focusing their social media efforts on the private part of these messages rather than taking all of these complaints and dealing with them on the public side of, let's say, Twitter.
Yeah, every large airline has a social media team, and they monitor Twitter especially, but also Facebook, to make sure that no posts about their airline go viral. They'll work with anyone, but especially if you have 100,000 or a million followers, they're going to be extra special good to you. And the idea is to keep whatever happened off the radio or off TV or just from going viral. That works, and it still exists. But one of the things that I found is that airlines are trying to take the conversations in private. So you would go to direct messages on Twitter or Facebook messengers or WhatsApp, and you would just directly contact your airline, just like you would on the phone, and say, you know, I have a problem. Can you resolve it? And it turns out, at least I'm told, that people don't really want to complain in a public forum. They don't want to tell an airline on Twitter that they're doing horribly. They just want their problem solved. And so if you can get your problem solved in a direct way in private, people want it that way. And airlines are beginning to realize that.
Even in those cases where perhaps the passenger wants it to stay public, I've seen the airlines really good at saying, hey, can we take this to direct message? So they try hard to take it in that direction.
Right. And I think everything should be everyone should want these things to be resolved in private. If you really want an airline to fix things for you, you're going to have to give them your record locator. You're going to have to talk about your specific issue, and you're not going to want to do that on a public forum. You might as well do it in private. The people on the social care teams are usually pretty good at helping you resolve a problem, and it's a nice way to do it.
In your story, you quote and talk about Conversational, which is Conversocial, a firm that helps brands craft their social media messages. I found it interesting. They've actually put together a list of all of the airlines and how long it takes them to respond on social media.
Yeah, they made a list about how long it takes airlines to respond. Airlines are all over the map on this. Turns out that at least in North America, United is the worst. If they're going to respond to your tweet, takes them an average of about 90 minutes. With JetBlue, it only takes them about 5 minutes to respond to your tweet. I don't know how much to read into this. Of course, United gets a lot more queries than JetBlue, but perhaps it means something.
Yeah, and I don't know, maybe you have United just being very wary about doing anything wrong these days.
Perhaps. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about another story that you've done, and this sort of dovetails with our conversation last week that had so much positive response from people that heard it. About how airports are designed, and this newest story you talk about how the airports of the future may become, you know, more of an attraction than they are just transportation.
Right. We see right now a lot of airports, and they are mainly in Asia, that are already attractions. There's a skating rink in Seoul. There's an IMAX movie theater in Hong Kong. There's a butterfly garden in Singapore. We don't see that really at all in the United States, South America, or Europe. Generally, we have gates, we have shopping, and we have food. So I talked to three architects about this, and they said U.S. airports especially can become community centers, places that people actually want to go. And their idea is to just make airports a reflection of your neighborhood. So you could do everything at an airport that you can do in your neighborhood. You can go to the park. You can have a picnic outside. You might be able to take your kids to the playground. You can, of course, shop. You could go to a beer garden. You could go to the yoga room. Some airports have pieces of this, but nobody ever says, you know, I want to go to the airport 2 hours early to hang out because it feels just like, you know, my local neighborhood. Now, the architects say that in order to do this, you can't just rely on travelers because travelers go in the airport and out of the airport. So one of the things that they suggest is letting anyone go to the airport. Hey, I want to go see a movie. I want to go to the airport. That doesn't seem real likely because since 9/11, very few airports have let people who aren't traveling that day go into the airport. But the architects talk about, you know, people work at the airport, thousands of people, tens of thousands of people, and they can be real community members. So if they say, hey, I want to have my happy hour in the airport, we don't want to go to Chili's 3 miles away, that might over time create more of a sense of community at the airport and people might be happier.
And this sort of ties into another issue, and that is parking. We've seen some big public parking lots near airports not really getting a lot of business these days because of Uber and Lyft and all of those others and taxis. People just aren't driving to the airport anymore. Is that a double-edged sword? Is it more room to sort of develop these spaces or not enough people going to the airport?
Yeah, people are not parking at the airport like they used to, and that's hurting airport parking revenue. And one of the things that airports are trying to do is figure out what can they do with this space. So the easy thing that a lot of airports are considering is, can we make our parking garages office space? But you could also do a lot of other things with it. You could knock it down and build another terminal. You could do pretty much whatever you want. And so right now the issue is Uber and Lyft, but the architects say, look, in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, we don't know exactly when people are going to come to the airport in driverless cars. And when that happens, you're really not going to need parking. Yes, your car will still take you to the airport, but basically the architects say there's no reason to park your car at the airport. You just send your car without the driver home, and then the car comes back and picks you up. So the parking garages of today are a place to play for architects in the future.
Yeah, you say that, and I giggled a little bit because it sounds like science fiction, but it's not. It's coming faster than we think, I believe.
It's coming faster than we think, but nobody knows exactly when.
Yeah, and you know, the thing you mentioned earlier about the butterfly gardens, I think it was at Singapore's airport. This is another thing. I mean, it doesn't have to be a movie theater. The green space is very popular.
Green space is very popular. I did learn while reporting the story that it's more difficult than you would think. It's very hard to do green space outside because you attract birds. And as everybody knows, birds and airplanes don't mix. So a lot of regulators are wary about allowing an outdoor park. And then inside, of course, it's just hard to have a park inside. You have specially coated glass. You need the lights to be on all the time for the passengers. And it's not the most conducive growing experience for the plants, I am told.
Is there at least a sense of that maybe we'll start rethinking this in some areas and at least giving it a second thought?
Yeah, you know, the architects say that any problem can be solved with ingenuity and money, and they just want somebody to take the chance and figure out how to put a real park inside an airport. And they say somebody is going to do it, and the Singapore Butterfly Garden is a good first step, but it's not exactly what they're dreaming of.
Brian, always good talking with you. We'll see you again next week.
Great, thank you.
Brian Summers is an airline business reporter for Skift. That's Skift, at Skift on Twitter and Skift.com. And make sure you sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report that arrives in your email box. It is at Skift.com/airline. You can also follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Summers. That's Brian with an I and S-U-M-E-R-S.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures up 108 points this morning. NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher as well. Gold and silver are higher as well. Gold trading up $9.30 an ounce at $1,331.80. Let's get the latest on agriculture now. And Orion Samuelson is with us. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you, Steve. This is the big day for the Department of Agriculture. It'll release the final crop production numbers for 2017. They will come out at 11 o'clock this morning while the trading session is underway. So that'll be watched by a lot of the traders and producers and exporters. And on the crop production numbers, the corn number, total crop production guesstimated by traders and analysts will be 14,579,000,000 bushels. That would put the corn yield at 175.4 bushels per acre. And then soybean production, the guesstimates by traders, 4,427,000,000, and soy yield per acre of 49.5 bushels. And I guess if there's going to be any surprise, Steve, it might be in the soybean number, but that's basically a guesstimate right now. And so we'll have to wait till 11 o'clock to get those numbers.
We're certainly going to be tuned in for that. Noreen, I guess on the same token here, maybe on the other side of this coin, is the deal about inventories. Corn and soybean inventories still are high, and really that's an issue, isn't it?
It is, yes, because we've got a lot of corn in storage. Soybean number in storage is up there, and wheat also. And so that will be watched carefully by the traders. This is the biggest crop report of the year because it finally summarizes everything we've gone through with late planting and the moisture that delayed planting in the springtime, and then the heat that came on in July and August and pushed the crop on to maturity. And so, yeah, this is a big one. And then our next big one will come at the end of March when we'll get the prospective planting report. Farmers now will be estimating for USDA what they're going to be planting in the way of corn and beans. So the next big report will come out in the end of March.
Concerning news this week, you saw this as well. I heard you reporting on it during the week, but Canada concerned, growingly concerned, that the U.S. is about to say enough is enough on the NAFTA agreement. That's not, the talks appear not to be going well. What do you know about this?
Well, the talks are moving slowly, and the people who said, yeah, we're going to have this done before we plant the crop in 2018, I think really were overly optimistic, because trade talks never move quickly. I remember that I think it took 5 years to get a World Trade Organization agreement put together, and it just never happens quickly because there are so many small issues that take precedence over the bigger issues. And I don't know why Canada is making the statement that the U.S. will pull out of the agreement, because at the Farm Bureau Convention, I didn't get any indication that we were at the point where we were ready to pull out of NAFTA. But as I say, trade negotiations are slow and surprising sometimes. So, yeah, if they do blow up NAFTA, which Donald Trump said he wanted to do back in the election campaign, that would hurt. And then we'd have to rearrange everything in the world global agricultural trading community.
What is on the show tomorrow?
On the show tomorrow, we're going to be talking to John Onken. He is the publisher of the Agri-Dairy Business Letter, longtime friend in Wisconsin who keeps an eye on the dairy industry, and who this week reported that the number of dairy herds in Wisconsin dropped again in the last month or in the last year. So we're going to talk to John about that, because while the number of dairy herds in Wisconsin went down, number of cows and production didn't really go down. So we'll be talking about that shift in the dairy industry in Wisconsin tomorrow.
All right. We'll be tuned in from 5 to 6, the morning show with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong. Orion, thanks, and have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, Orion Samuelson with us this morning. 5:56 now here on the opening bell and on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, January 12th. We'll get the advanced monthly sales for retail and food services report, possibly a better snapshot of how retail sales went for the holiday season. Manufacturing and trade inventories also out today. Major business reports sort of limited to that. We'll see the consumer price index for December as well. The earnings season begins with banks out of the gate today. J.P. Morgan Chase, among others, reporting earnings today. And President Trump will undergo his traditional full physical, the first of his administration. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, January 12th.